AM Consumer Reports. And Fridays at 6 a.m., Permian Basin Oil and Business News from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Weekday mornings at 6 on Recording Library of West Texas Radio.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 46 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the mid-40s. Then tomorrow, partly cloudy with a high in the upper 60s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the mid-50s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 6 a.m.
Welcome to this week's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American Sunday Business and Oil Sections, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the oil report of the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, January 16th. Texas Oil and Gas Association says industry benefited state despite challenges of 2020. The story was written by Mella McEwen. Despite last year's 1-2 gut punch of a global pandemic and a devastating oil market crash, Texas's oil and gas industry continued to come through for the Lone Star State. In its annual Energy and Economic Impact Report issued this week, the Texas Oil and Gas Association said the industry paid $13.9 billion in state taxes and state royalties in fiscal year 2020. The report also said Permian Basin counties and school districts received more than $1 billion combined. $978 million went to school districts across the Permian Basin, and Permian Basin counties received $334 million, all in property taxes. The Pecos Barstow Toya Independent School District received the most in property taxes, $167 million, an increase of 53% from the previous year among the state's school districts. Reeves County topped the list of Texas counties receiving property taxes, $74 million, an 80% increase from the previous year. According to the report, Midland County received $17.9 million from oil and gas property taxes, a 37% share of its total tax base, while Midland Independent School District received $134 million, 37% share of its total tax base. Ector County received $7.7 million, 13.3% of its total tax base, and Ector County ISD received $24.9 million, 14% of its total tax base. The results, amid the pandemic and oil market crash, showed, quote, how indispensable Texas oil and gas is in keeping Texas's economy healthy and impacting the economy in substantial ways, said Todd Staples, TXOGA president. He noted that as the pandemic hit, the industry, quote, adapted at lightning speed, unquote, and helped produce needed personal protective equipment like gloves, face shields, gowns, ventilators, and even hand sanitizer, all as oil prices crashed. Staples noted that Texas Energy also fueled the transportation of medical equipment, of food, even computers, to help students with virtual learning. Quote, there is no substitute for oil and gas, and a strong, robust industry benefits all of Texas, he stated. The taxes and royalties paid by the industry fund roads and other infrastructure, fund first responders, hospitals, and schools, and go into the state's rainy day fund, permanent school fund, and permanent university fund. Quote, every Texan benefits whether they're in the industry or not, Staples said. Beyond the economic benefits, he said a healthy industry benefits the environment by improving air quality as greenhouse gas, methane, and carbon dioxide emissions fall with increased natural gas use, he said. The benefits also expand globally as exports of Texas oil and natural gas help developing countries receive more reliable, affordable, and cleaner energy, he added. With the Texas legislature convening this week, Staples unveiled a three-part roadmap to recovery that he said will drive greater investment in all aspects of the industry and help power the state's economic recovery and continue providing revenues through state and local entities. First, he urged lawmakers to ensure, quote, continued responsible development of the essential energy infrastructure like electric transmission lines, roads, high-speed internet, drainage, and flood control, and pipelines for water, oil, natural gas, and transportation fuels. Secondly, he urged legislatures to embrace what he called smart tax policy and specifically called for the renewal of Chapter 313, the economic renewal program that attracts investments and jobs to Texas. Staples also called on legislators to resist calls to increase severance taxes, quote, on an industry that already pays 6.3 times more in taxes on a per-job basis than the average of the rest of the private sector, end quote. And finally, he urged lawmakers to maintain their commitment to science-based policy and rational discussion related to environmental issues and to ensure that leading oil and gas innovators are at the table during those discussions. Quote, we can have economic and environmental progress, and the industry has a proven track record of working toward both goals, he said. Simplicity, relevance, key to writing today's landowner leases. The story was written by Miller McEwen. For all the riches oil and natural gas provide, they have no value until the marketplace assigns them a value. And making sure producers and royalty owners alike receive their full value is the greatest challenge in writing lease agreements, Midlander Susie Boyd, president of Caballo Local Midstream, this week held a virtual presentation to help members of the Austin Professional Landmen's Association make sense of a changing oil and gas marketing world. Good takeaways for landowner lease agreements is to keep it simple, keep it relevant, and make sure it makes sense from a marketing perspective, Boyd said. The rise in exports is the primary change that landmen, the ones who negotiate the lease agreements that allow operators to drill for oil and gas, must take into account, Boyd said. She explained that the rise in exports is sending crude to the Gulf Coast for export. That means the preference for crude flows has shifted from Cushing in Oklahoma south to the Gulf Coast. New pipelines are headed that direction, and Boyd said some existing pipelines to Cushing are being evaluated for reversal to Houston instead. Likewise, natural gas is headed to the Gulf Coast for export due to a supply glut, Boyd said. As a result, two new gas pipelines from Kinder Morgan and the Whistler pipeline, expected to come online this July, have opened up flows from the Permian to the Gulf, boosting Waha and Reeves County significantly. Likewise, she said prices have been altered. Quote, for crude, the postings that many refer to simply aren't in the market anymore. Today, postings are simply a discount from the daily NYMEX price. Crude pricing formulas are complicated, containing a roll adjustment as well as a location adjustment in addition to deductions for the cost of trucking. Language in some leases does not address these formulas accurately. To remain flexible, the lease would be better off if it just said, pay what the lessee actually receives, with perhaps a clause that provides an audit provision to prevent abuses by the lessee. End quote. For midstream gas processors, the move is away from traditional percent of proceeds deals to fees rather than taking compensation in the form of gas and plant products price. Quote, as in real estate, the value of gas is all about location, the best location and the highest market, Boyd told her audience. Is the market the Henry Hub in Louisiana, where NYMEX gas is traded, or a regional hub like the Permian's Wahab hub? Or is it at the export destination like China? Another factor is the cost to get the gas to the hub. Even plants located in the Permian Basin must pay some transport to get to the hub, she said. Then there's the cost of getting to premium markets. The basis differentials will reflect the positive or negative value between market centers or hubs, she said. In writing a lease, she circled back to her takeaway of keeping it simple, relevant, and makes sense from a marketing standpoint. Keep the marketing terms flexible to accommodate market changes, include a provision for shut-in gas, and make sure this provision is understood. Include how flaring will be handled and determine how to handle negative gas and natural gas liquids prices and negative netbacks, she advised. Market-based deductions for sales to affiliates should be allowed. Lease requirements should be reasonable and take into account lessees' economics. And Boyd's last piece of advice is to require lessees to provide copies of gas contracts and gas settlement statements upon request. There should also be clear communication between the landman and the accounting group to ensure the provisions negotiated by the landman are correctly handled by the accountants and with the reservoir engineers to ensure their economic model assumes the same royalty burden as what the lessee receives. Supply-demand issues strengthen West Texas sour prices. The story was written by Mella McEwen. In a lesson in basic economics, competition for a commodity that has limited availability is driving up the price of that commodity. In this case, the price of West Texas sour has exceeded that of West Texas intermediate several times over the last 2 weeks. After well shut-ins last spring and summer amid crashing oil prices, marketers are again buying West Texas sour, said Jesse Mercer, Senior Director of Crude Market Analysis at Enverus. Refiners like the Borger and Big Spring, which buys Permian grades to process into fuels like gasoline and diesel, are buying more crude again after having reduced throughput earlier this year, he told a reporter Telegram by telephone. But, he said, traders are also buying the heavier crude. Quote, you just can't find enough supply, he said. In addition to the shut-in of U.S. wells, Mercer said supplies of crudes similar to West Texas sour from Colombia, Mexico, and members of OPEC are also lower supporting prices. The problem is West Texas sour is not used just by refiners, Mercer said. He explained that if producers, especially those producing condensate, want to move their production to market, they have to meet pipeline specifications. By adding West Texas sour to condensate, he said it looks more like the sweet crudes coming from the Midland Basin and is more sellable. Quote, there's a misconception that light crudes are easier to refine than heavier crudes. That's not the case, Mercer said. Continuing the quote, if you are operating a refinery designed to run a heavier slate, you just can't substitute those heavier barrels with lights on a whim. That can cause put units within the refinery to be out of balance, end quote. However, sour streams that make up most of West Texas sour production is prevalent from the Central Basin Platform and the Northwest Shelf, Mercer said. He estimated in the mid-1970s, WTS production from the Central Permian platform alone was about 320,000 barrels a day, though it has now tapered off to about 150,000 barrels a day. Until 2014-2015, when tight oil production really took off, he said producers saw really strong price differentials and then they began tapering off, only to begin drifting upward again recently. Production in the Midland and Delaware basins trends toward lighter grades, 38 API and higher. We see quite a lot of condensate being produced in the Delaware, and that is over 55 API, he said. Mercer said he didn't know how long the higher prices for West Texas sour will last, but said all crude prices will be stronger as long as members of the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries keep barrels off the market. Quote, there is a potential for more barrels coming to market in April and May that could put downward pressure on prices, he said. Quote, if you look at the forward curve, forward pricing, the market right now is pricing West Texas sour about 10 cents over Midland Sweet. Then sour goes back into a discount again with the March spread, Mercer said. The market is anticipating the premium will disappear. End quote.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Sunday, January 17th, 2021. Rates on the Rise by Dennis Elam, associate professor at Texas A&M San Antonio and a 1966 graduate of Andrews High School. From the Wall Street Journal, Saudi Arabia's move helped send front month Brent crude oil prices up 7% in 2 weeks to above $55 a barrel. The combined attempts to cut supply by the Saudis, Russia, and American shale producers has rallied oil prices and energy shares. West Texas Intermediate is trading about the same at $53.57. Liquefied natural gas, LNG, has soared from about $50 in October to $66 due to cold weather. A reshuffling of priorities at ExxonMobil has that price up from $32 in November to $50.31 today. These improvements have moved energy service Halliburton from $12 to $22 in the same time frame. We have mentioned numerous metrics in this space indicative of past highs in the stock market. Today, it takes 9 columns in the Wall Street Journal to list new highs, but there are only 7 stocks making new lows. That is another indication of at least a fully priced market. Biden's trillion-plus package will not restore the economy, as the last 4 failed as well. It will spur interest rates higher, our current long-term prediction. The wild cards mentioned in the open quote are the new global warming crowd in D.C. and the weak U.S. dollar. After falling for months, the dollar is probably near a longer-term low. A dollar rally could cap the energy advance. Which brings us to the outcome of the Georgia Senate election. Speaker Pelosi bet that there were more Democrat voters in stoking resentment of Trump. She was right. Now it would seem her best long-term tactic for assuring the Republicans' future difficulty would be to let Trump go as he attempts calculating a political future. In truth, he has none. He is radioactive, now shunned by multiple groups. But Nancy won't back off even attempting to impeach after Trump leaves office. Alan Dershowitz suggests that is not possible, but never mind the law. she may have a surprising ally in that attempt. Mitch McConnell won his re-election, but lost the Senate Majority Leader post. He places the blame on Trump's accusations of an election gone wrong in Georgia and insistence the Secretary of State, a Republican, was at fault. If the Senate votes to bar Trump from future office, that would be the opportunity to McConnell to eliminate this nemesis from his party once and for all. A career politician, McConnell is no doubt assessing how to regain majority status in 2022. And that will be much easier without the mercurial, unpredictable Trump inside the political tent. If Mitch votes Trump out, he could easily have 16 other Republican senators seeking the same future relief. Finally, the team of Siegfried and Roy defied predictions there was no future in a Las Vegas magic show. They became the show to see, entertaining thousands of Vegas visitors. In addition, they gained international recognition for their $10 million compound preserving rare white lions and tigers. Roy passed in 2020, and Siegfried just now. They will be missed as two who made a difference. The Economist. Strength Amidst Chaos by M. Ray Perryman, head of the Perryman Group. I first saw the U.S. Capitol as a student about five decades ago. For the past 40-plus years, it has been part of my professional life. Testimony, hearings, meetings, meals, receptions, and crunching numbers. Whenever I am there, I find a few moments to pause in the imposing rotunda, peruse the nearby statues, or perhaps climb to the top for a closer view of Constantino Brumidi's breathtaking The Apotheosis of Washington. Even the hallways are majestic. I marvel at the glistening white dome and recall Abraham Lincoln's words in 1862 to a young chaplain dispatched by General Grant. He spoke of the criticism of finishing it as war raged and said, "If people see the Capitol going on, it is a sign that we intend the Union to go on." This edifice transcends a mere building. It is where the laws, both magnificent and ignominious, which govern this quarter millennium grand experiment, quite young by historical standards, emerging democracy via a republic and capitalism into a great nation, are forged. I always get chills when I enter the Capitol. It is never routine. Witnessing this hallowed ground desecrated and lives lost within its storied walls is a travesty. When I consider these events, as an economist, something truly amazing surfaces. As financial markets opened on January 6th, prior to the siege, they surged upward for unrelated reasons. They remained there throughout the day, and those immediately beyond, and global markets generally followed suit. Markets collapsed after 9/11, when the House initially rejected key legislation to quell the Great Recession, and as the severity of the coronavirus first became apparent. They often fluctuate dramatically in response to an offhand remark by the Federal Reserve Chairman, or even a single company missing an earnings estimate by a few cents. Yet on this most consequential day, they scarcely noticed. This performance can only mean one thing. The financial markets, where trillions of dollars are exchanged daily, seeking to dissect the tiniest bits of information, never perceived that the U.S. government was in jeopardy. If there had been a scintilla of doubt for a fraction of a nanosecond regarding the stability of the largest and most powerful economy on Earth that supports the primary world reserve currency, there would have been a crush of epic proportions.
Thank you for joining us for this week's readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American Sunday Business and Oil sections. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org. Welcome to this week's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American Sunday Lifestyle sections, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Sunday, January 17th, 2021. Life and Times. Master Gardeners. Deer grass is beautiful and native to the Permian Basin. By Emmy Ohmschneider and Debbie Rowland, Master Gardeners. Deer grass, Mühlenberger Rigens, is one of the grasses that is native to the Permian Basin. This beautiful showy grass is a perennial that forms a dense clump of thin pointed leaves. I have two in my yard. The largest is 4 feet in diameter and 4 feet tall. A plus for people living in the country, deer do not like this grass and will avoid it. The leaves range from green to pale silver green. At first, the leaves are upright, then as the season progresses, they begin to arch, looking much like a fountain. During the summer, slender purple or yellow spikes will rise up to 5 feet tall. You will need ample space for these grasses. Deer grass reaches maturity in 2 seasons and does not reseed easily. This plant is a great choice for xeric yards. It requires full sun, well-drained soil, and is beautiful when mass planted. When mass planting, be sure to leave room between plants. If planted alone, it can make a statement planted beside a large rock or attention-getting hardscape, because grasses bring movement, color, and texture to a garden across the seasons. This grass is well-behaved and, once established, can be ignored for weeks at a time. Best of all, there are no disease issues. In late January or early February, it can be cut back to about 18 inches using clippers, a big job, or an electric hedge trimmer. Much easier. Butterflies and birds love this grass and use it for shelter during cold weather. Native bunch grasses, like deer grass, prevent erosion, help to retain soil moisture, and provide food as seed or as a host plant for insects. Those insects, in turn, support a variety of our urban wildlife, especially birds. With so much going for them, grasses are worth planting to bring a touch of wild and transform an urban landscape into an urban habitat. For more information, call the AgriLife office at 498-4071 in Odessa or at 686-4700 in Midland or visit aggie-horticulture.tamu.edu or westtexasgardening.org. Gardening, Texas Master Gardeners. We are an educational service organization of volunteers trained by Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Service. Visit westtexasgardening.org. Start tomatoes indoors before transplanting to the garden. By Jeanette Castanon. Tomatoes do well when they are started from seed indoors in January. To start your seeds, use a container of well-moistened seed starting mix. Make shallow furrows with a pencil or a chopstick about 1/4 inch deep. Sow seeds by dropping them along the bottom furrows 1/2 inch apart. Cover each seed with soil about 1/4 inch deep. Water the soil gently and attach labels to each variety. Place the container indoors or in a warm place that is 75 to 80 degrees Fahrenheit. The seeds will need a good light source, so place them under a window or under a UV grow light. In about a week, you should have germinated seedlings. After about 2 weeks, you should see signs of leaves above the soil surface. These are called cotyledons. After about a month, you will finally begin to see true tomato leaves. At this point, they need to be transplanted to larger containers. Do this carefully to avoid damaging root tissue. Once spring weather warms up to about 55 degrees, you can finally bring your tomato transplants out into the garden. They should be well-rooted and established by then. You can also choose to wait for tomato seedlings to be available at your local garden store, but starting them from seed can provide a sense of accomplishment that you grew your tomatoes from tiny seeds all on your own. For more information, call the AgriLife office at 498-4071 in Odessa or at 686-4700 in Midland. Email Jeanette.Castanone at ag.tamu.edu. That's Janette.Castanone at ag.tamu.edu. Or visit aggie-horticulture.tamu.edu.